Hey, welcome to Resonate's Sermon Q&A podcast. We are so thankful for the questions that have been submitted, and we look forward to what God's going to do in our time together. Now, let's begin the show.
Hey, welcome back to the Summer Q&A podcast. I know you guys are holding on to summer as long as you can, but I also think that some of your kids went back to school this week, and but we're going to try and actually make it a longer summer because we've got one more sermon series in this summer called Mindful, which I hope all of us are looking forward to, primarily dealing with the doubts, the darkness, all those things in our minds. So that's coming up next week. But this week, we're still answering questions from our Nature and Nurture sermon series, and this one was on Sabbath as resistance. So, hey, before we jump in to that, let's introduce. I'm Jim Applegate. I'm the executive pastor here.
I'm Yvonne Chung, minister of equipping.
I'm Will Bedell, pastor at Hayward Campus.
Yeah. So, hey, Pastor Will, before we jump into these Q&As, I just would love for you to tell me what is going on at the Hayward Campus right now that you love.
Ooh.
Man, one of the things I love is what God's doing in our young people. So big things. One is they just went to camp and seeing some of the young people that were the leaders. Mm-hmm. That went to camp as leaders. They used to be students, which is amazing. That's just like, dude, that's
disciples making disciples,
man. And you know, these they're giving up their summer for that. They're giving up paychecks for that, which is pretty stinking awesome. And then one thing that my wife and I are just thankful for, and it's not a brag thing. It's just like it's thankful is while they were at camp, my son actually got the youth together for a night of worship and a night of just getting together. And he did that all on his own. He organized it, he made a band. He learned how to play the guitar, which was crazy.
Come on.
And he just organized the whole dang thing. And so, yeah, I think God is doing something in this next generation. They're hungry and they want people to know Jesus. So
yeah, love that, love that. Hey, I wonder too. Will, you pastor a what we call a video campus. Mm-hmm. So you know, I'm primarily at what we call our broadcast campus. Mm-hmm. We have several locations at Resonate. Mm-hmm. Fremont is broadcast, and then also Hayward and Oakland, and then we have our online campus, and we're always looking for more places to put campuses, like Vallejo, right? So what is the difference between broadcast and a video campus? What's the difference between Fremont and Hayward?
I don't think there's any difference at all. I mean, the obvious answer is there's a video playing, but that's about
just
it.
Just the video of the sermon, right?
Just the sermon. You know, everything else is live. I mean, it's like if you go to In-N-Out in Fremont, you go to In-N-Out in Hayward, it's going to be the same, right?
Yeah.
It's the same product. And what I love is the resources of being a multi-generational, multi-campus place in a size that Hayward is. That's the benefit that we have of being a campus of Resonate Church. So it's just beautiful being part of this big family, you know?
Yeah, I love it because, you know, I feel like Resonate is one church heading one direction,
right.
But it also has, there's nuances of expression in Hayward and in Oakland and different places, you know, because we're, I mean, honestly, like we're a tech community down here where you guys are not so much up there. And so the way that we talk and feel and hear and all those kind of things. So I love it. What's your best pitch for getting someone to come to join you at Oakland and Hayward?
I mean, go to Oakland if you want to go to Oakland, man, please. I mean, them brothers, they're on mission for the gospel north of San Leandro, baby. Go up there, please. But in Hayward, man, it's just if you love Hayward and the surrounding areas and the East Bay and you want people to know Jesus, it's just being able to be discipled by people who really, really love Jesus, and you're gonna see a smiling face every single time, and somebody grabbing you by the hand saying, "Hey, how can I help you grow?" It's that personal touch in Hayward that I think is really unique.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I love about coming to the Hayward campus, I get to visit it pretty often, and I love the generational. You know, you have a lot of older people and a lot of younger people, and then a mix all the way through,
it's the best.
They are all engaged.
Yeah, they love each other too, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So you'll see a 20-something-year-old woman going out to eat lunch with like a 70-year-old woman, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And they're just like, they're holding hands. They're like, I can't believe I get to go out to lunch with you. Yay.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah.
Well, and I got to tell you, some of my favorite restaurants are in Hayward because I love Mexican food.
Yeah, you do. And you love our joint. We won't tell the name because we don't want it to get destroyed by the podcast.
Yeah, I love coming to Hayward. You guys have great food up there. So, do you like Mexican food, Yvonne?
I do.
Okay. How far out of your way would you go to get good Mexican food?
You know, even though I do like Mexican food, it's not at like
it's not the pinnacle
priority.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I would be down to drive as far as anything with anyone who loves Mexican food.
Okay.
But I'm not usually driving that.
All right. I don't think you've ever been to the Mexican tortilla factory in Newark with me, have you?
That's real close
I did
by,
for
man.
The first time.
Oh, yeah, we did do that. Yeah.
That's super close.
That place is
legit.
Actually, Pastor Will introduced me to that place, and it is the bomb. So,
yeah, it was
big
good.
Shout out to them. They are a sponsor today for our podcast. No, I'm just kidding. We don't have a sponsor. Yeah. But it is a great place to go. So, I love it. I live
Will
on
made
that
sound.
I'm Mexican.
So yeah.
Well, hey, you guys, we are talking about Pastor Ryan's sermon, Sabbath as Resistance, today. Which was, you know, I thought it was an amazing sermon.
Yes.
So how did God speak to you guys just off the get-go? Like, what did he say to you in this sermon?
I mean, like hitting us with the Holy Spirit, knocking us off of our pew?
Yeah. I mean, I learned how to turn off my iPhone for the first time in this sermon. So that was helpful for me.
I don't think I ever have turned off my iPhone.
Yeah.
Just being honest, I don't think I've ever actually turned it off.
Wow. Well, now you know how.
So, yeah. I really love when he just gave us the Greek breakdown of the word contentment, and meaning just right plus as myself. So when you're feeling just right as myself, but not as defined by me, but that, yeah, contentment is found in Christ alone. And so if he's the one that tells me who I am, then yeah, when I'm like firing on those cylinders of who God made me to be, and as myself, then it'll feel right. I'll be content, and that was just like awesome.
It's good. Yeah. How about you, Will?
Yeah, I think you know Yvonne and I were having a conversation even before the podcast, which is how much of our drive is self-inflicted, right? And Pastor Ryan said Pharaoh's alive and well today.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we like to blame, oh, it's my family, or it's my spouse, or it's my kids, or it's my job, and it's like, no, you're kind of buying into Pharaoh. Pharaoh's alive, and he's telling you, work harder, do more. And maybe sometime in the past, someone did say something, but you're still holding on to that.
Yeah.
And so what Pastor Ryan was saying is like, no, man, like the spirit of Pharaoh saying, do this. And
yeah.
You're holding on to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're listening to the podcast and you're not engaged in church, what we mean by Pharaoh is Pharaoh was the ones who enslaved the Israelites in the Old Testament.
That's right.
And he was like, basically, work will set you free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that was and he never did until God rescued them because it was God's work to pull them out. So, yeah, I just think the whole idea of Sabbath as resistance is phenomenal because, you know, as Pastor Ryan was talking at the beginning of his sermon about how consumerism has been on the rise since the 50s and, you know, talking even through the architecture of our houses, how small the closets were in the 50s and how massive they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And yet to actually take a period of time, maybe a day, maybe hours, whatever it would be for you, to say, I'm not purchasing anything. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to a store. I'm going to prepare my life in such a way so that I can take a break from all these things is sort of like resisting that consumeristic culture that says you're only valuable if you have more or if you have the newest thing or if you have the, you know, the 2025 model, like, you know, it's resistance against that and realizing that you can be content, okay, as yourself without having all those things. So, yeah.
I got two things to say about that. One is you'd be surprised how hard that is. So my wife and I, we're pretty stingy people. I mean, stingy is not the right word. We don't like spending money, okay?
Frugal.
But we're frugal, right? Yeah. But even so, like if we say, hey, the rest of this month, we're not going to spend any money. That's actually hard because you don't realize how often you open up Amazon. You don't understand how much you spend on gas. I mean, those are things you pay for and you don't even realize it. Right. And the second thing is we don't realize how much we've bought into upgrading things. And again, my wife works for Apple. Mm-hmm. Right. And so even today at staff meeting, Pastor Edward was like, whoa, how old is your iPad? And I'm like, I don't know, like 2017, something like that. And that's not old, right? Poor Americans. And he's like, I thought your wife would have gotten you a brand new one. I'm like, man, that's $2,000. No way I'm doing it. No way. I can't do that, right?
Yeah.
But it's just, but most Americans is like, I got to have the newest one. I'm like, this thing works. So who cares?
Yeah.
But most people, because it's not the newest one, he's like, you're still plugging in your Apple Pencil.
Yeah.
He was like, I can't believe you're still doing that. And I'm like, well, it works. So.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that kind of addicted quality to every upgrade. And, you know, like Ryan said, the world is so good mm-hmm. at enticing us to that level. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, marketing.
Yeah.
They know, you know, I was talking to one guy at Resonate who, you know, he actually does market research for, you know, one of the big financial firms. And he says that they pull all their data from Visa because, you know, if you pull your data from government reports or whatever, then you're going to be years behind or months behind or whatever. But if you can know what a person spent yesterday in a certain geographic zone, then you know which commercials are hitting and which ones aren't. And therefore, you can actually talk to your clients right in front of you about, hey, this is where these things are selling right now. Oh, advertise there.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and that's I was scary. Like, man, it's beautiful in the sense of just using technology, but it's also, it is the evil at the end of the day because it's enticing our hearts to something that we don't need or making us feel discontent when, man, in Christ we are content. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Or like when those ads just like pop up on your phone from a conversation that you had.
I love that.
That used to freak me out. But yeah. Then I've literally said, well, because this happens anyway, I'm just going to make it work for me.
Yeah.
So I'm really like judicious with my like clicks.
Yeah.
So that only stuff that I want to pop up pops up. But it still is totally in like a consumeristic way.
I love talking about weird things around you, Yvonne, so that things weird things pop up on your phone. It's perfect.
Man,
you know, that's the it's the true test of friendship, you know.
Vinegar.
Just start talking about, oh, so you want to take a trip to Liberia, you know? And then all of a sudden you get tourism from Liberia on your phone.
I'm not gonna click it.
Okay. Okay, but you'll still see it, and you'll think
I
of
will.
Me.
I will think of
you. Yeah.
I hope that happens tonight.
All right, we better jump into some of these questions here. And we thought we'd do something a little bit different today, that if you actually put your name on the question, we would answer those questions first. So
yes.
So Mike actually put his name on this question,
Mike.
It was actually the top voted question. So this worked out well.
Yes, Mike.
On all accounts. So Mike, here's your question. Are there practical things we can do to become more content, to be hungry for and satisfied by God more than earthly things? So that's a great question. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it helps me a lot when I think about whether the earthly things that I'm going after are actually satisfying me. Because I think, unless if I identify them as like a faulty satisfaction source, then I'm not going to change anything. And there's things right now that I have not changed because I still think they're good. I think just going through that, and then that just sends you on that journey of then like searching, and in this case for God.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, there was a part of Ryan's sermon that I thought was genius where he talked about, he loves to go to restaurants to eat steak. But sometimes, you know, he's a carboholic is what he told us, which I am too. I love the chips that come before a Mexican restaurant, you know, meal. And then I love the bread, you know, and he said that you just eat the bread, you get filled up on the bread, and then you don't eat the real thing. And so I was thinking about this question in response to that. Are there practical things we can do to become more content, to be hungry and satisfied, to be hungry for and satisfied by God more than earthly things? That, yeah, I think you actually need to fast from the bread and from the carbs of life. And so, you know, it's, you know, in my mind, like if I'm trying to fast from those superficial things that, you know, like even the past couple nights, usually I go to bed with my iPad and I'll read the news or do something digitally before I go to sleep. And I've just been like, man, I was having a problem concentrating. So I'm like, I just need to stop doing that. And, you know, and we live in a two-story house, so I, you know, leave my iPad downstairs. I go to sleep reading a physical book, and I wake up in the morning not being able to grab a piece of technology, and it's sort of like made me fast and hungry for something different, you know? And I've just been really appreciative of that. So I think there's an element of fasting here from those superficial things, even if they're okay. You know, like it doesn't matter. Like it might be, you know, something that you love doing that is not unbiblical, it's not evil, it's a totally okay thing, but it's secondary. And so just avoiding that for a while, like there's nothing, like what Pastor Ryan said about shopping, there's nothing wrong with shopping at all or spending money. There's nothing wrong with it, but just stop for a little bit And then I think that'll actually make you hungry for, you know, deeper things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got anything to add to that one, Will?
I mean, everything you guys said is great. And the only thing I would add is if you're in those moments before you push the buy button, if you could ask yourself, why am I doing this?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think if you can get to that why, like, what am I trying
to get out of
this?
That's a great question. Yeah.
What's the hole in my soul? What do I need? And then just trying to figure out how you could get that from God, whether that's significance, whether that's just whatever it is, you know, whether that's security, pleasure, whatever it is, and just asking God. And just finding whatever your spiritual discipline is that would fill that need. Yeah. For some people, it's scripture. For some people, it's worship. For some people, it's service. But finding that need filled through God, through some type of spiritual discipline.
Yeah, that's a great thing to do, is just pause and ask questions. Maybe that's a, like, even on Amazon, they have, you know, put it in your cart.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go a couple more clicks before you, you know, so maybe take a day, you know, like maybe take a while before, you know, because they really want you to just push that through right now, but just leave it in the cart and see if God would meet the need some other way.
Yeah.
You know, might be a great thing, but just to be aware of what is actually happening in my heart right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, okay, Mike asks another question. How do we better discern between contentment and accumulation, i.e. buying or getting things that we want versus things that we actually really need? So how do we better discern between contentment and accumulation? Well, that's a good question. How do you guys do it?
I think I feel like I can't answer this question because I'm not saying I have perfect discernment, but I kind of know when I want something versus need it. And my problem more is that I keep choosing a lot of the wants versus like the needs. Because if I just ask myself, like, what are the things that I need to like live? Mm-hmm. And then I think about, okay, if I feel like God has called me to a certain thing, like what are things, or even wants, right? Things that are not like bare necessity needs, but things that if I had this, it would actually help me like do what God's calling me to do or be who God's calling me to be.
Yeah. Well, I think this kind of goes back to the last question, is like, you know, what you said, Will, about just asking yourself the question ahead of time, like, why do you need it? So have you guys ever watched Tidying Up with Marie Kondo? I think that's her name, Marie.
It is her name.
That is her name?
Have not watched it.
Have you watched that, Will?
My wife made me.
Okay. What'd you think of that?
She made me.
So you didn't like it then? Okay. All right.
No, actually, I did like it because it's true. Like when things are, if you come to my office in Hayward, this is going to blow people's minds. If you come to my office in Hayward, it is immaculate. It's the only space in my life that is immaculate because it is a place that I enjoy being.
Okay.
So to her philosophy, right? Everything has a place.
Yeah. And to Marie Kondo's philosophy.
Yes.
Yeah. I've never actually watched it, but I'm always fascinated by these, you know, minimalist movies or minimalist shows. It seems like a big thing today. So what is she after in the minimalist thing? Like,
it's really just not having clutter around you. And so it's funny how we think having more stuff is actually going to make us more happy, but actually it's like if you have a boat, like, do you own the boat or does the boat own you?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And so if you have more things around your house, so if you have so many CDs, pretty soon you have to buy a tower. And if you have one tower, then you have to buy two towers. And then, you know, those kinds of things. If you are into cycling, then you have to have a really nice bike. And then you have to buy the nice brakes. And then you have to buy the nice nightlight and helmet and just, you know, all these different things. It's just one thing after another. You know, I think that's what she's going after, basically. So what a minimalist does is say, you know, I only need X, Y, and Z to survive. And if I stick to these things, I can be content in them. You know, it's not a spiritual approach, so to speak, but combined with spirituality, you know, with the gospel, it's very healthy. I was going to say my answer to this question would be something that I come back to time and time again, is the answer would be the church. Like, how do you discern between need and accumulation? Me personally, I don't have that discernment. I have people in my life that tell me, hey, you need to go to a shoe store and buy shoes that fit you. Because again, I'm such a tightwad that I won't spend the money on extra wide shoes. And so somebody that loves me in my life will say, hey, no, you can't just go buy the latest Nike or whatever, or not the latest, but whatever. You can't just go buy whatever's cheap on sale at the store or whatever. Like, you need to go to this store and you need to go find this specialist because you're going to go walk around in this place. So I need you to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And so It's good having people in your life, your small group, people that love you.
Yeah. And I love that example because that's a case where you're actually spending more money,
yes,
but to get something because you need it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't spend that money.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another one where like it is a need because now I can walk longer and right. I need to walk for my health.
Right.
Right.
So that's interesting then. So what I hear you saying is, you know, if you're really concerned about this question, the difference between contentment and accumulation, ask your MC.
I would.
Like your small group, ask a few Christians around you, hey, do you think I have the right motivation in this? Do you think this could be helpful? So yeah, other people can speak into your life and, yeah, I think that's a great idea. I Please. Would say another thing too is just move and see how much is left in boxes for weeks. You know, like I mean, we just moved for the third time in a couple of years, and
that's so real.
That's yeah, so good.
Like, you know, or you know, what really is in your storage bin,
right?
You know,
if you
rent a storage bin, like, what's really in there? You know, because I would say that probably we're at the point in our lives we just became empty nesters a couple of years ago. And so a lot of the stuff in boxes is nostalgic stuff.
Sure.
Okay, then that's different than accumulation of things. Mm-hmm. But at some point, we got to get rid of the nostalgic stuff because it's just clutter,
mm-hmm,
you know? And but, you know, if you have a box that you've been sitting in the garage for years and years and years, let me tell you, that's accumulation.
Mm-hmm.
That's not helpful,
mm-hmm,
you know? So that might be a helpful thing as well. You know, just move a bunch of times. So, yeah. All right, let's move on to the next question. The next one is asked by Francis.
Yeah, Francis.
So Francis says, our society values work/striving for more over rest and being content with what we have. How do we allow ourselves to value rest and contentment? So I think Francis is saying that, hey, we love to work hard, and we value that because we want to buy more things, and we value having more things and working hard than we value rest and contentment. So how do we allow ourselves rest and contentment? Would that be a good, you guys think that's a fair explanation of what Francis is asking? Yeah. Yeah.
I think
I think sometimes, like if you're answering a person's question, sometimes just repeating it back and saying, hey, can I ask you really what you're asking is a really good tool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you guys think? If our society does value work and striving, and yet biblically we're saying rest and contentment, how do we shift ourselves there?
Yeah, I think whenever it comes to these conceptual or philosophical questions, the thing that always helps me the most is like, to what end?
Hmm.
And adding that to the end of the question. Hmm. So let's say I'm getting swept away with the culture, which I do all the time, of like striving and work. But then when I ask myself, to what end? What am I striving for? And you just have to sometimes wonder, follow that wonder trail all the way down to the end.
Hmm.
And it's like, does that actually line up to who you feel called
That's good.
To be
yeah.
and who you are?
I
if
like that
lines up with your values, then even if it's striving for work, even though I don't agree with that,
right?
I would say just keep going.
Or what God has made you, right?
Right. But if it doesn't line up with the values that you're trying to aspire to, then it's like, no, like
that's super helpful. Yeah. I like to think about that. I was thinking more in terms of, cause he said the world, and I was thinking like, okay, so what, that's the world's value, right? Working hard, but what is God's value?
Mm-hmm.
And God's value isn't necessarily rest. God's value is more like trust. Mm-hmm. And so the world's value is work hard because it depends on you. And God's value is have this regular rhythm because
right.
I'm going to provide. So it's a little different question than what you're asking,
yep.
though yours is really good. So I'm going to think about that. And so the question is, am I working really hard because I'm trying to prove to the world that I'm valuable? Or am I keeping this rhythm because I trust God to provide for my family? Because the truth is, most of the time I'm working really hard because I think it depends on will.
Yeah, same.
That's my problem, which is probably, we're getting to the same point, but I took a different route.
Yeah.
More circuitous, right? I always make everything hard.
No, that's still a wonder trail. You did exactly that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really helpful because it's basically, are you working to earn something?
Right.
Or are you working because you're already...
Right.
Right. Because God's earned it for us.
Right.
Because God's already earned, he's already done everything. Right. And so that just totally throws that question on its head. And yeah.
And that's our culture, man. I mean, we have to understand and believe that as American as we think we are, and we are, But we think that this is an egalitarian culture, and it's not. It's a dog-eat-dog culture, man. We have to prove ourselves every single day. Are we strong enough? Are we brave enough? Are we pretty enough? Are we smart enough? And we do this to ourselves all the time.
Yeah. I was just thinking that even an egalitarian or a person who thinks, no, we're egalitarian, the first thing they're going to do is prove that we're more egalitarian than you.
Right.
Because it is a dog-eat-dog world. And
that's so funny.
Yeah. Like, no, we are more egalitarian. Like, okay, you're just proving the point of that.
It's egalité.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So
sorry.
So funny. Okay.
Okay. You guys are nerdy and I love it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is here's another question from, I think the gentleman's name is Toan Nguyen.
I don't know based off of the front spelling. It might be Tuan, but yeah, Nguyen.
Okay. Tuan, we are so sorry. And if you were
or Toan.
We would love to get your name correct, but here's your question. At least we can do that. What should we be doing during the Sabbath? What can be practiced during the Sabbath to become closer to God? This is such a great question.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Pastor Ryan, and I think all of us who got to preach during this series were promoting different things, you know? And so even as Pastor Ryan's talking, he's talking like, take a day off, don't go shopping, you know, these kind of things. And I was saying, no, it's a day of absence of expectations, of, you know, putting aside your to-do list and your to-be list. So outside of that, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that maybe our congregation could have got mixed messages off of this.
Absolutely.
And yeah, if you were listening to this, you did get mixed messages. So, sure. Yeah, so what do you guys think? Like, what should you be doing on your Sabbath? Like, answer that in conjunction with Ryan's sermon, Pastor Ryan's sermon, but also, you know, the other ones that have been preached.
I think for me, it's a lot of, I start with the question of, like, where am I having trouble trusting God? Like, what are really specific, practical things that I'm having trouble trusting God? And then during the Sabbath, it is that discipline to actually position myself in a way that causes me to trust him. So in some ways, it does create a little bit of stress, for sure, because my natural inclination is to want to, you know, go toward those things, you know? And so I think for me, a lot of times I'm always looking at my schedule when I'm like working, like, oh, am I going to miss something? Am I going to miss something? And so and that stresses me out. But then to have nothing on the schedule sometimes stresses me out too. But on my Sabbath, I purposely don't schedule things as resisting that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah. That's why we asked her to be on the podcast.
Dang,
she usually has the best answers.
Oh.
So
that was really good.
Yeah. Well, and I think for me, what should we be doing on the Sabbath? I think there really is something to what Pastor Ryan said about not consuming on the Sabbath and that being, and maybe there would be a season in your life of just saying, no, I need to stop. We need to not eat out. We need to just be home. Mm-hmm. We need to, like, I mean, I have a friend who, he starts the Sabbath in the evening on Thursdays.
That's great.
And he does it by lighting a candle in his house. And it's just like a sign that everything becomes non-digital at that point. You know, like it's disconnecting from society, and then they just rest until the next night. And I think their rest is like board games. It's like being unplugged from their phones, from everything. It's really hard to get a hold of on that day.
Great.
I think that's great. But like you said, Yvonne, I think like you've got to be aware of yourself that day, asking yourself deeper questions of, man, what do I really need to take a break from? Like,
As you're sharing another thing that I didn't realize I looked through the grid of is what causes my heart to kind of like be more numb or dull versus like what causes my heart to like come alive.
Mm-hmm.
And even then there's a lot of subjectivity in that, but by alive in terms of like, it feels free. I feel joy. Whereas like numb, it's like, there's a lot of like rote unthinking. I can't really think of things that are beautiful. When I feel free and joyful, like my imagination goes places. I feel like I just process things better in general. It is a lot of like just noticing where you're at.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you said closer to God and the question, I mean, people hate when you ask this question. like when you as the pastor respond, well, what do you do to get closer to God? Because, oh no, I just asked you, right? And, but it's a good question that I, as a pastor, like asking parishioners is, no, really, like what helps you get closer to God? Is it, do you get closer to God when you're with people and you're praying as a group? Do you get closer to God when you're serving? Do you get closer to God as you're, you know, worshiping? Do you get closer to God through scripture? I'm not going to tell you how I get closer to God because it's just going to make you like, it's not going to help you at all. So I'm not going to tell you what I do. But if I don't do those things, I won't get closer to God. So I know what helps me get closer to God. I know what helps doesn't help me. And so I've just learned through trial and error. And so Tuan, you should just, I almost feel like throw some spaghetti against the wall. What sticks? Like do a couple of different spiritual disciplines and see what helps you get closer to God and do those. Yeah. And just, you know, see what really helps you grow closer.
And just to super like address that, like, reading the Bible has not always helped me to draw closer to God,
right.
But it doesn't mean that I've stopped doing it.
Correct.
And so I think there are certain things, because I was just thinking of like that other question too, yep. But now it does more days than not, but it didn't always start off that way. But why I kept doing it is because God told me that that is how to get closer to him. Yep. And so God is generally really clear through scripture about certain things, and this is one of them. And so I'm just going to trust him on that.
I mean, even in that, when you say the scriptures, I think we just take the scriptures as a whole and we don't realize that the scriptures are like, you know, you have the beginning, you have the first five books of the Bible, and then you have like Daniel, who's just such an amazing book about God and his sovereignty. And then you got Jesus, and then you've got the Acts of the Apostles, and you got Revelation, you got the Psalms. I mean, it's if you understand the different parts of the Bible, you there really is a book of the Bible for every mood, whether you're depressed, excited, whatever it is. And so just knowing those differences, I think, could really help us spark our devotional reading for sure.
Yeah. If you're bored, go read 1 Samuel or the Kings.
Oh, dude, like, please read 1 Samuel. Just, read Judges.
Yeah.
Yeah. Read Judges to your kids. I dare you.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I love it. And I also think there's just, you know, it's kind of like eating. I mean, there's certain things, and, you know, working out, there's certain things that you just keep doing to be healthy, right, whether you feel like it or not. Yeah, and good. Those actually have a long-term effect on your health. And I think, like, reading the scriptures, spending time in prayer, meditation, being at a church service, is those are important disciplines that you say, no, I'm not going to take a break from those things, because those actually in the long haul make a massive amount of difference.
Yep.
So
this is a shameless plug for our Thursday night services, actually. You know, my mom doesn't do her Sabbath on Sunday. She goes to a Catholic church on Saturday nights.
Okay.
Because she can't wake up on Sundays anymore. She just...
Okay.
So she goes, and if she was living here, she'd go to Thursday night service.
Yeah.
That would be her Sabbath.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's you. That. Come here on Thursday nights, baby.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you. We'd love to have you.
Yeah. Come hang out on Thursday so you can have a full day just to enjoy God's goodness on Sunday. Like, yeah, that'd be great. Okay. I love this question. So Pastor Ryan, he was up in front. He was talking about you can disconnect, and he taught us all how to turn off our cell phones. Right. So he actually had his phone on stage. You might just get the video of this because it's priceless. Especially second hour on Sunday, because it took a while for it to turn off. So it was pretty funny.
That's funny.
But so the question got asked, does Pastor Ryan turn his cell phone off at mealtimes and on the Sabbath? And Yvonne, what was your answer to that question? Like, I would totally throw Yvonne underneath the bus.
Thanks,
here.
Jim. yeah, you know, before I answer that, I would just say that anytime any person teaches anything, it is aspirational. And
that's a fact.
And okay. So okay. Fact. I think we just have to remember that, because if it wasn't, then that means that only perfect people can get up and preach.
Yeah,
and Pastor Ryan and every other preacher, me when I get up there as campus host and I'm like spiritually directing our people, like it's aspirational. Like I want to, but I don't always. And so, yeah. Point blank, he does not turn off his phone for every meal. Like he doesn't, because I've eaten meals with him and we're both on our phones. So yeah.
So what do you think he meant by this then?
I think that it was a super just on the ground practical example of something that you could do to really just cut out like consumerism from your life. Because I do turn off my phone sometimes, and I used to do it sinfully because I just didn't want anyone to find me ever. And that was a different issue. But yeah, now it's I think it's just super helpful to not have something that's demanding my attention all the time when I'm already in a world that everything else is constantly demanding my attention.
Yeah.
I mean, he nailed me. I've never turned it off.
Yeah.
I mean, that's legit. I mean, one thing I do is think about a year and a half ago, I started putting my phone on do not disturb mode during dinner time, and that really solved a lot of tension in my family because my wife and I we definitely split up the cooking and all that stuff because she works full time as well, and so but just in the middle of like answering text messages or calls or whatever and some of them are important and some of them aren't, and the important ones are just going to get through regardless, right? And my wife understands that. She knows what it's like being a pastor's wife, and sometimes I have to go to the hospital. That's not a problem. What's a problem is like, hey, how you doing? You know, that's the one that bothers her, right? And so ever since, you know, I have do not disturb during dinner time, and it's just like I just don't look at my phone during dinner. It's not even a thought anymore. It's weird.
Yeah.
Because it's been built into our rhythm now.
Yeah. For me, I don't necessarily turn off my phone, but I can put it away pretty easily. Mm-hmm. But I'm realizing like one of the reasons I can put my phone away pretty easily is because my wife has her phone on all the time, you know? And so, you know, one of the things, I mean, we have 5 kids.
Yeah.
We're always concerned about their well-being and where they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, my wife likes to be available.
Sure.
You know? And so I think that might be helpful is even taking it in turns to turn off your phones.
Yeah, sure.
You know, like, hey, babe, just tell the kids, my phone is on. If you need to get a hold of us, like, call me. And, you know, and I tell the staff at Resonate pretty often, if you need to get a hold of me at night, call my wife and she can figure out because, you know, she sleeps with the phone by her bed because she's concerned about the kids and everything. And I apparently don't care about the kids because my phone is downstairs. Oh. No, I do care about my kids, but I'm more from the old school of like prior to 1997, I think, like. My parents had no idea where I was at or what I was doing or how to get in contact with me. You know, it was like it's the old adage of make sure you're home before the streetlights go off, you know, and that was or before they go on, you know, and it's kind of crazy. But I think you could actually take it in turns like that.
Yeah, no, it's good.
You could. Yeah. You could tell someone. Yeah, because I think at the heart at the end of the day is not it's not about turning your cell phone off or leaving it on. It's about disconnecting. Right. That's what Pastor Ryan was really after.
And I think just on the receiving end of that, when I'm having a meal with someone, I try my best to just keep my phone in my pocket and don't check at all. Sometimes I do pull it out and yeah, I feel bad about that. But when someone does that with me and they keep their phone just like not really looking at it, I feel like way more valued. And and also just like I'm delighting in their presence because it's like just super evident. And
yeah, so, no doubt.
Yeah.
For sure.
So here's a question. If one can only financially support themselves working 7 days per week, how can they be in Sabbath? It's a great question.
It's a great question.
Yeah. So, I mean, Bay Area is crazy expensive.
Fact.
And, you know, so they're saying, hey, I need to work 7 days a week to financially support myself. Any thoughts on that? I mean, we got to close out the show in a couple of minutes here, but what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I even love... from Pastor Will, your sermon a couple weeks ago of, can one of those days still look different? And so, yeah, you might still be working on that seventh day, but like, what could you do to let that day be different?
Yeah, if you're in the service industry, I mean, just doing everything you can, it's going to sound legalistic, but just even to say like, can you have like the evening off on one day and the next day the morning off? You know what I mean? So that
so you have a longer block of time.
Yeah, you have one continuous block of time. And that's something I did when I was in grad school, because I was in grad school and I was working and I just have that one because that was me. I was working 3 jobs actually because I was in grad school working and I was working at a church as an intern. So I understand this question very well and it's hard for sure. And I would just say, like Yvonne said, aspirational. Are you going to do it perfectly? No. Can you do it a little bit better every week? I think you can. And just seeing, you know, God knows your heart. God knows you're trying. And if you're trying to Sabbath and you're trying to put that rhythm in, man, God loves that. You know, it's just like giving. Have you never given before? No. And you gave $5 today? Awesome. Sweet. Praise God. Like, wasn't that awesome? You gave $5. That's awesome. Way to go.
Yeah.
You know, I want to maybe attack this question a little bit differently Because it says, if one can only financially support themselves working 7 days a week, how can they be in a Sabbath? Or how can they Sabbath? The assumption in this question is that we financially support ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is actually that God supports us financially.
That's right, yeah.
You know, and so God's commanding us to rest, and he's also saying, and I will provide for you.
Yeah.
So I think my challenge to this person would be to say, actually, why don't you try taking a day off and see what God will do? Like, put him to the test and see how he will provide if you keep his commands. Because I think that's what he's saying is, like, rest, I got you. You know, like, I'm going to take care of you. And that is so scary, especially I can only imagine that maybe a single parent wrote this question, you know, and they're like, man, I've got all these bills. I'm trying to take care of my kids. I want them to have stuff just like all the other kids have.
Yeah.
And that's really hard. But, you know, for you to actually say, I mean, my mom used to say this to me all the time, that work is only one place that God provides for you. And what that began to do was it just began to shift my theology to understanding that, oh, work is just, you know, it's only one of the places God provides. Like, he's in charge. He's in control. He's got this, right? And so that was really helpful to me. So I would just encourage, like, I think that's what this whole Nature and Nurture sermon series has been about is when God commands us to do something, let's do it because we can trust his nature.
Yeah.
Right. And the way that we prove his nature to ourselves is we actually nurture it by doing the practices of things like Sabbathing and taking a day off. So, yeah, I just encourage that. So, all right. You guys got any other thoughts before we close out the show today?
Just what you just said is I would say Thursday night, baby. Like, if I'm your manager, I used to run a restaurant. If I'm your manager, you say you need Thursdays off. I'm giving you, we don't need you on Thursday. We need you on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So you come to me saying you need Thursday off so you can go to church, I don't have any problem with that. You come to me saying you need Sunday off, I got a problem with that. So, like, you know, ask. Don't be afraid to ask for those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I would just encourage people, our next sermon series, Mindful, is going to talk a lot about just anxiety. And I think that so much of what we talked about in every single episode of this sermon series podcast is that it's like, can you be more aware of yourself to even like diagnose some of the things, that's how good. You can Sabbath better. So yeah, just like tune in thinking about that as you're listening to the sermons in this upcoming series.
Super good.
Yeah. So that's a great plug as we close out our sermon series coming up is Mindful. So it's the question that we're asking is like, what is your mind full of? And if it's dark thoughts, doubts, anxiety, those type of things, like, you know, we're doing a sermon series on how God wants to change that. So, hey, I think we're surrounded by people all day long that are, you know, their minds are full of really hurtful and trauma and different things. And yet we want to see God do a great work. So please, you know, prayerfully invite the people around you, you know, like let's do our best to share the good news.
Or share it online afterwards.
Yeah.
Share it on your Facebook page.
Yeah. Yeah.
Insta Tumblr.
Yeah. And so, hey, share this podcast with people too.
Yeah. With the phones that we never turn off.
That's right. I love it. All right. Well, this is Jim and Will and Yvonne, and we are signing out. We hope you have a great rest of the week and join us next week on our Q&A summer podcast. See you soon.
That's a wrap. Thank you for hanging with us as we dive into these tough questions. We encourage you to share this podcast with those in your circles, and we encourage you to share with us any more questions that you might have. Thanks for being with us.